Hey, you're about to listen to the newest episode of Parallel Words, but before you do, just keep in mind that the stories contained on this show do belong exclusively to the authors who wrote them. Any use of these stories without the author's consent is not allowed, and any similarities between our stories and other works is purely coincidental, unless otherwise specified. Now, let's get on with the show. Oh yeah, an advance warning. For no good reason, I start this show yelling. So, you know, be ready for that. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Parallel Words, episode 19. I am your host, John Jagger. Joining me tonight is someone really special. It's Aaron Green.
It's me.
It's me.
I'm special. What kind of special are you meaning there, Mr. Jagger?
The best kind.
Oh, okay. So both.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Double plus special.
Yeah.
Oh,
Aaron,
yeah.
How the hell are you?
I am pretty awesome. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I am so tired.
Well, I didn't say I wasn't tired. That's just a natural state for me. But at the same time,
I'm great. I've been recording podcasts all day.
Aw.
I'm an old pro at this by now.
Excellent. That's good to know.
Yeah. You need a podcast.
At least one of us is.
Saturday's the day for podcasts, then. Yeah, it's been a busy day. I woke up early, and I was hosting the first podcast, which I usually just have to join and you know, talk is basically what is demanded of me.
So basically my job.
Yeah, I was doing your job. But this morning, I had to figure out how to get the stream working so I could do it live. I had to make sure all the passwords were right. I had to up the production value of it because every time we do it, I want to make sure that Ben is like, why is John doing video? I never do video. I don't know if he thinks that, but I do it anyway in case he does.
Take that, Ben.
It was really weird, though, because he was the reason he couldn't be on the show to do it was because it is his girlfriend's birthday, and he was taking her on a special trip. So he joined us in the chat room while she was getting ready. And he ended up being there through most of the show.
Yes. As we all know, ladies take a long time to get ready.
They do.
And it is worth it most of the time.
Yes.
So,
but good on him. And, you know, I'm sure there were times where he had to duck out here and there and do stuff. I know he was too busy to be on the show. I'm not criticizing. It was weird.
And happy birthday to Ben's special lady friend.
Yes. Happy birthday, Sarah. You don't listen to the show, but happy birthday to you anyway.
The positive vibes will get out there somewhere.
Yeah, they'll go through the, well, we sang happy birthday to her like Murloc. So,
you know, lovely.
That happened. And it's now available for other people to hear. So great. But yeah, so that was the first show. I had a lot of getting ready to do and all that. Then I tried to grab some lunch while I went through a minor crisis because there was a recording issue with it. Had lunch, did another show, went through that. That one I just got to do your job. I just got to play my part. Finish that, and then promptly started working my butt off trying to finish writing this story. But man, was I tired. So at one point, there was a nap. Actually, there were two naps, because the first nap was rudely interrupted when what I was holding hit me in the face, because that's how tired I was.
Wait, what?
So I had my laptop balanced on my stomach, and I was typing on it, and it was tilted towards me. So I was kind of, I don't know how to describe it. I was laying down, and I was typing, and it was at an angle. And I apparently fell asleep while typing, which made my body move, and then the laptop fell and hit me in the face.
Interesting. Well, I do have to say, though, John, if you have not fallen asleep while typing before, you're not doing it right. I think that is something that the majority of us who are, who consider ourselves to be writers, have done at one point or another. I know I've certainly done it. I know I've fallen asleep on a keyboard before. I think it's a rite of passage.
It happens to everybody, is what you're telling me. Okay. So
It's nothing to be ashamed of.
So then I woke up, and then I said, okay, I guess I should probably take a little nap. And I set a little alarm for myself so I wouldn't miss this show. I took another nap. And then I woke up and realized that I had a lot more writing to do and then did that. And here we are. So that's
Yay.
been my day. It's been very, very busy. How's your day been, Aaron?
It has been kind of typical. I mean, typical for me, which means I was awoken at like 6 a.m. by my children, and then kind of stumbled around trying to get things ready for them in the morning until I got things ready for them in the morning, and then I had to get ready myself to go off to job part deux. And then did that, came home, got stuff ready, recorded my story, got it all recorded and compiled and everything like that, and pretty much finished that right as it was about the time to make the call.
I get to feel like what it's like to usually be you, where I'm like frantically plugging away at writing, and you're like, "Yep, I'm just starting recording," and just like, "You son of a
It
bitch," while
could have been worse. At least I just text messaged you, like with you, like every once in a while it'll be like, 2 days in, and I get the email with your MP3 of your story on it, and I'm like, "You son of a bitch.
typing. Yeah, it's like.
Are you trying to guilt trip me, Jagger? Is that
Here
what you're
it
trying to do?"
is. Here's the whole story.
Mine's done and it's recorded, he says sarcastically.
It's behind a velvet robe.
Velvet rope of imagination and words.
It's been a fun day. You got a new microphone
I
too.
did.
You sound
And
good.
it's nice, man. I like it. It's all fancy.
No more rock banding it up for you.
Nope. I will be not sounding like I'm trying to talk through a megaphone. As I felt kind of like as I was listening to the other ones, which in and of itself is a strange experience. Because I don't know about you, but like I listen to, obviously you listen to the podcast because you do all of the editing, but when I listen to it, I'm like, was I there? I don't remember that to some things, and other parts I'm like, wow, that was silly. I'm okay with it, but it was silly.
You would probably get a kick out of watching me edit one of the episodes. I kind of do weird things when I edit. Sometimes I get bored, and so I will just do edits because I'm like staring at the thing while I'm bored, and I'm just like, oh, I'm gonna do some frivolous editing, and I'll remove long pauses, or I'll remove here and there because I do a lot of you do some
Speaking of.
so I will remove some while I'm editing if I'm paying attention. If I'm
So you what
not,
you're saying is that you'll remove some mums.
some ums, that'll go. That's all going.
Awesome.
No, it's not true, but that'll go. So I go through and I just will kind of mess with stuff like that. Then other times I just leave it be. Then other times I decide to remove entire sections where I just think, we kind of rambled here. I'll go ahead and remove that. But it's really the weirdest process in the entire world.
That seems to me like that's what editing kind of is. It's making those decisions. Okay, what makes this flow and makes us not sound like crazy people?
It is, but then I see what I do for other shows, and I think, man, I don't put that level of effort into it.
Well, you know what? That I appreciate, you know? This podcast, John, could not be what it is without your diligent editing.
I'm sure there's someone out there that's mad. They're like, how dare you cut stuff?
Trust me.
It's for the better.
It's for the best.
Yeah, the stuff I remove, I don't know. I'm sure someone out there would find value in it, but usually it's a really, really good idea in the grand scheme of things. It's cut
maybe,
for a reason.
You know, we'll have the clip show one day, or
I keep saying
the,
that.
The behind the scenes type of a thing where we're just like,
I've deleted a lot of the raw recordings just because they're really, really big, and there's getting to be a lot of them.
I can imagine.
And when you consider that usually we've talked for an hour, 45 minutes or so before we even start the show.
Yeah,
it can get a little bit big. But you know what? Whenever we do a live show, I pretty much leave those entirely alone. So the next time we do a live show, I would encourage everybody to listen if you want to know what the whole thing sounds like.
John and Aaron, live and uncut.
Yeah. We're finally uncensored. Woo!
You just sit there going, poop.
It's not even bad. It's not even bad swear words we're using. We're just like, hey, Aaron, holy crap. You can't say that on a podcast.
Yeah, it is. You're on the internet.
Actually, our version of uncut and uncensored would just be, here's a really boring conversation we shouldn't have subjected you to, but now you get to be.
If you thought the show was interesting before, now you won't.
Not anymore. Parallel Words, uncut, uncensored, and total boring.
Uncut, uncensored, and unentertaining.
That's great.
It is. It is pretty great.
But what we're really getting at is Aaron got a new microphone.
Yeah, that's what bringing it all
that's
back.
That's what we're trying to say. Aaron's got a new microphone. We're very excited.
Yeah.
So we're gonna put that to the test.
Yeah.
And you recorded your story with it. So
I did.
It's going to be an entire show of new microphone.
Yeah, I think it should be pretty awesome.
Although I do miss the days where I knew you were holding the microphone.
Yeah, that got exhausting.
I bet. Because I could occasionally picture it in my head, and I would just kind of giggle about it. Because it's such a, I mean, not because it was tiring you out, but because it seems like such a kind of prima donna sort of thing to do, is I'm going to hold this microphone.
I'm going to be real here for just a minute.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Let me bring it down to you.
Let me level with you guys.
You think that I'm like holding it like so that it's like upside down?
Yes.
I'm spitting some truth at y'all.
I'm dropping knowledge bombs on everybody. So, Aaron, this is the ultimate episode.
The ultimate episode?
It is the ultimate episode because it contains the ultimate cast of characters.
It is.
It is finally time for us to unveil unto the world Goatman and Puberty Wolf.
It is an idea whose time has finally come.
Perhaps too soon.
I don't know. You know, it's, and obviously we'll get into it more when we're talking about it, but I kind of like the characters that I created.
I cannot wait to hear how you justify the name Puberty Wolf.
Oh, God, I can't believe I thought of it. It just was one of those things where I'm like, well, okay, how am I going to do this? How am I going to create the character? And I was thinking through and I'm like, well, what if I did that? Then I'm like, okay, well, that can work for the character, but how do I justify the name? And then I'm thinking of it and I'm like, Mother of God. Like, it was literally like I thought of it and I felt the instinctual need to take off my glasses and just stare off into space going, how did I think of that? And well, then I realized where I came up with the idea, and I thought, well, it's not really plagiarism.
Okay, sounds like we might touch on similar subjects, so I'm curious to see how it all comes together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. All right, Aaron, let's get to it, because first, how long is your story? Do you know what your word count ended up being?
My word count ended up being about 1,800 words.
Wow, that makes me feel really... I don't know what that makes me feel. Mine's over 4,000.
Oh, Lord above, man. You know, and that's the thing, is I'm sure that I could, if I had the time, I would expand it greatly. Because there are some things about it that I really enjoy the kind of universe that I've created for this. And I'm sorry, John, I'm probably going to come back to Goatman and Puberty Wolf in some way later on, because, you know, I don't know why. Yes, Puberty Wolf is ridiculous. The name is ludicrous. What kind of superhero would call themselves Puberty Wolf?
The best kind.
But at the same time, you know, this world that I've created, I'm like, huh. And I've got all these kinds of teasers and little vague hints to other thing, you know, other things that I have ideas for that I may eventually go into, but we'll see. You know, I don't know. We'll see.
All right, so. Well, let's get right to it. Okay. Aaron, what do we need to know before we take this adventure with you?
All right. You know, the story that I've written is in two parts, and it is entitled The Long Hard Winter, as if you'll remember from the supplemental episode that we did last week, kind of teasing what we were doing with it. I did not end up changing the title. I think it kind of leads into what's going on. Now, my only regret is I had planned for a third of two parts, or three parts total, and I only did two, and it was mostly because there was a lack of time to really hammer out the details that I really wanted to be very solid for the third part. So that may be one thing that I go back and revisit and kind of bring forward as a special treat or something, if you can classify it as that. this is my Goatman and Puberty Wolf story, entitled The Long Hard Winter. The Long Hard Winter by Aaron Green. Part 1. The Wild Hunt. Dusk settled heavily on the coastal city of Bridgeport as a deep, gray fog rolled in from the sea. It weaved through the darkening city blocks, adding its own blanket of mist to the one of snow that already covered the ground. The ocean breeze kicked up flurries of snow that brought with it fine wisps of the low cloud that twisted around corners and into the heavily shadowed alleyways where it chilled the few remaining vagabonds taking refuge there, too downtrodden or proud to take shelter. In better days, Bridgeport had been a thriving community where some of the most significant technological advances of the 21st century had been made. Bolstered by an incredibly profitable shipping industry, the city flourished. But that was a long time ago. It had been a long, hard winter, and that, combined with the harsh economic downturn, had left many of Bridgeport's citizens without hope. Some grew desperate, and in their desperation, many had turned to the people and things they considered lesser evils when compared to starvation and destitution. Many made decisions they would otherwise never have dreamed of making. These Lesser evils, however, were not in the business of charity, and soon organized crime began to take over. As districts fell to the families or to gangs, the growing criminal element became bolder, defying politicians and police alike. Violence spread like a cancer, distorting the once thriving metropolis into a festering wound. When the event occurred, there was little anyone could do but put out the fires and hope for the best. It took weeks before the first effects were seen, and even then they were mostly rumors, whispers of the perpetually scared or ravings of the regularly drunk. But throughout the city, people spoke in hushed tones of men gone mad and of dark figures out of myth and nightmare roaming the streets. The official comment from Mayor Chachins and the chief of police stubbornly continued to claim that all was well and that everyone was as safe as they wanted to be. This was, of course, a lie, the same lie or delusion they had been professing for years, but the fact that they themselves were rarely seen in public anymore belied their true convictions that here in Bridgeport there be monsters. As night wrapped the city in its chill arms, however, a new presence made itself known. A lone figure stood above the city, looking down on the place he once called home. "This," he thought, "would be the beginning." The gifts he received from the ancient god would not be squandered. The price he paid would not be without purpose, yes. This is where it would start. The cleansing of Bridgeport. With inhuman agility, he leapt from rooftop to rooftop. Shadow and silence enveloped him as one of their own as he stalked the city in search of the contagion, in search of those who would prey on the weak and on the hopeless. In Bridgeport, his search was not long. Below, a shadow-steeped alleyway, a woman, three armed thugs, two knives, one bat, the one on the left moves with a slight limp, target him last, no visible gang affiliation. His mind flooded with the information as adrenaline and power coursed through his body. He leapt from his position and landed nimbly between the aggressors and their intended victim, his new bulk enough to crack the grime-covered pavement. As he slowly rose, he let out a deep, booming snort through his nose, causing his nostrils to flare wildly. With dark eyes, he glared up at the hoodlums and growled, "You are to be congratulated, scum, for you are to be the first of many that I offer up to the wild god for punishment." "Who the f—" one of the men began, but he was cut short by a brutal kick that sent him flying into a pile of overturned garbage cans with a crash. Another of the two men tried to rush him from the side, but was met with a series of ruthless blows that left him a crumpled heap on the ground. The third man's eyes grew wide with terror. He dropped his blade and began to run, but he was not fast enough to escape the beast, who threw him to the ground. Crouching atop him, he ran the cruel tips of horns across the criminal's cheeks. "What are you?" the terrified man whimpered.
"I am the servant of the ancient god. I am the leader of the wild hunt. I am the purifier of this city."
"You're a freaking goat, man."
"That, too, is true."
The goat man stood, dragging the man to his own feet and toward the woman who stood at the end of the alley, trembling.
"Beg her forgiveness."
"I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. We wouldn't have hurt you. We just wanted your—"
"Enough! Your excuses are worthless. Evil must not be excused."
"I had no choice," the goat man growled, and lifted the man into the air, pulling him so close to his face that their noses brushed.
"There is always a choice."
The goat man turned to the woman.
"Are you hurt?"
"No," she replied tentatively, "thanks to you."
Go quickly. Be more careful in the future.
The woman ran down the alley and disappeared around a corner. After a moment, the goat man turned to face the thug again.
What is your name?
Burroughs. Tommy Burroughs, please don't hurt me.
There is always a choice, Thomas Burroughs. Will you join the hunt?
The man trembled as he stared into the goat man's masked face. Hunt? The goat man let out a bleeding, mirthless laugh.
Evil. We hunt the evil. Will you join, or do you refuse?
I'll join. Join. Just please don't hurt me. The goat man grinned.
You are mine now, Burroughs. You are a part of the wild hunt. If you forsake your vow to me, you will be punished most severely.
I won't, I promise. I'm done with this shit. I'll go straight.
Yes,
the goat man said as he set Thomas Burroughs down and backed away slowly into the shadows, hooves clicking faintly on the concrete.
Yes, or I will know.
Burroughs moved forward into the gloom, but the goat man was gone, as were the bodies of the other would-be muggers. Tommy Burroughs limped away, looking over his shoulder the whole way home. Part 2. Sheep's Clothing. The goat man moved slowly through the trees, leaving deep hoofprints in the mud. He prowled around the humming chain link of the electric fence surrounding the sprawling factory complex. There had been rumblings in the underworld for months about the industrial space, rumors of screams of terror and howls of pain. Confirmation had been made when two of his hunters had gone missing while scouting the place. This was not acceptable to the goat man. He leapt nimbly over the fence and landed on the other side with a soft thud, his hooves sinking several inches into the wet earth. He dodged security lights and cameras as he crept toward the largest of the buildings and, with a feat of silent strength, pulled the handle from the door. The enormous building lay cold and empty, almost completely gutted despite the security systems in place. No workers, no guards, no janitors. Just darkness and the occasional eddy of dust blown from one of the shadowed corridors by a draft blown from some hidden crack or vent. Despite its apparent desertion, the goat man moved stealthily around the building, all his senses wary and alert, searching for any clues as to the location of his hunters.
Left 11 doors, 8 unlocked, 2 sealed, no footprints, minimal electromagnetic energy signatures, 3rd door in, fingerprints on the knob, untraceable, scent familiar but unconnected, sound at the end of the corridor on the right, approximately 12 meters.
He stalked toward the source and found a small staircase leading downward, which he descended, whereupon he discovered a locked door. It did not remain a barrier to the goat man for long. It was on the other side of the door that the goat man found what he was searching for. Scattered laboratory equipment was clean and well kept. It was certainly not abandoned like the rest of the facility. On a table at the far end of the room was a still warm cup of coffee and a half-eaten pastry and the cooling bodies of his hunters. Off to the right, however, a more gruesome tableau of technological advance lay affixed to the wall.
7 tanks, 2 empty, 2 broken, drained liquid of unknown composition, 3 occupied.
The goat man walked to the first of the tanks and peered darkly at its occupant. little more than a mass of vaguely human and animal forms seemingly cobbled together at random. The label read, "Stage in utero, strain, rat, status, deceased." He snuffed in disgust as he moved on to the next, showing in similar form, floating in the blue-green liquid. This one more beast than human, yet still twisted and unmoving. The goat man read the card carefully. Stage, infant, toddler, strain, avian, status, deceased. The third held contents more curious and terrible than the first two. Stage, puberty, strain, wolf, status, active. As he examined the card, the figure inside the capsule slowly opened its eyes and pressed one clawed hand against the glass. The goat man acted swiftly and decisively, and with a well-aimed and a brutal hoof, he shattered the glass, releasing the imprisoned creature, who fell limply to the ground in a rush of liquid black cable and transparent tubing. The creature, its lupine features wet and paint, pulled the cluster of medical tubing from its throat and gasped in a rough, grating bark. "Who?" the goat man said. The creature replied with only another series of heaving coughs as its inhuman hands clutched at its human throat. "Who are you, then?" The creature shook its head. Wolf-like eyes roamed the floor, searching for something, though whether it was physical or simply something to say, the goat man was unsure. Then, with one clawed hand, the creature picked up the damp card that had been attached to its prison and held it out to the goat man. He looked at the card again. "Puberty, wolf?" he asked somewhat incredulously. The thing nodded. "Very well, puberty wolf it is. Can you walk?" Puberty wolf rose slowly to its full height, swaying only a little. "Good," the goat man said, eyeing the creature. "Then we shall hunt for those who did this to you. Will you join?" The puberty wolf, with its mismatched limbs and half-human face, made a deep, rumbling growl of affirmation. "Excellent," said the goat man. "There is much to do. I find myself much in need of a hunting partner."
That, sir, is awesome. I dig that in every way you can dig a thing. That was great.
Oh God, I knew that you were taking the one route, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go the exact opposite direction, and I tried to do it as legitimately as possible. Like, how would you, you know, format that? So, but yeah, we can save that for the talking about it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it, because I'll tell you, my first reaction as you went through the story was, ah, shit, he picked the part that I should have done. You picked the part where Goatman's being an awesome superhero,
mm-hmm.
and you captured that perfectly. You know, I picture him very much as a Batman-esque figure. Yeah. And it was cool, and it captured exactly what I want superhero Goatman to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just perfectly written to reflect that. So I'm going to just say kudos to you. I don't know what I can say besides you captured what I would want that to be. perfectly. So
thank you.
But it also pisses me off because I did not pick that part. So we've now had a really cool, awesome story, and then I went with the origin story, and I don't think it's as good. But because nobody wants to see Uncle Ben die, people just want to see Spider-Man swing around on a web, mm-hmm. and that's what you put in. And you did get the origins of Puberty Wolf in there, which was
cool. I did.
But people, you know, want to see Batman punching guys, and you got Batman punching guys, so that was awesome.
Yeah, that was my, you know, that was my goal. I always thought that, like, you know, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's you're right. Nobody wants to see Uncle Ben get killed, but you know what? The sidekicks, you know, origin story, like Robin, like that's fun to look at. So I was like, okay, well, I want to go straight from the beginning with Puberty Wolf, because I got to figure out a way to explain where that comes from, because that's just not a natural conclusion that one would come to.
Yeah, I as soon as he started looking at the tanks, I kind of pieced it together, but I just was, you know, I was waiting. I mean, it doesn't remove necessarily the ridiculousness of the name,
no,
but it
not of the
it definitely, and I mean, I don't think there's a way to.
No.
I think the only way that name gets less ridiculous is if you latch onto it and you hear it enough to where it just loses all meaning to you.
Mm-hmm.
So but it was introduced in a way that totally made sense for the story context that it was in. You set up a really cool and interesting universe, a really cool character, and you're right. You know, you said you may want to write more about it. I'm totally okay with hearing more about it. So,
because I wanted to try to, you know, I mean, with the universe that I've created, it's obviously, you know, it's Goatman as a Batman-like figure. You know, that's just, it seems to me that was the way that we pushed it out, right? That was the concept, that it just made most sense to me in that way. And
right.
That may be because of the way that I wrote my villain story. That just seemed the best way to do it. But when it came down to it, I was like, no, it's like a Batman and Robin kind of a thing. And so if you've got Batman and Robin, who do you have to have? That wasn't a rhetorical question.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to just keep going. You got to have Joker.
Exactly. So I actually came up with a Joker character for Goatman. And I was trying to figure out a way to get it put in there as a third part. But I just, it's, for some reason, just the narrative wasn't coming together, and I have a vague outline for it, but it's just, yeah, it's just tough to try to get it in there. Like, I was, you know, and for me, with that part, the, where the starting point was a lot of the sticky element to it, you know.
Yeah.
Do I start with the creation of this villain character, or do I simply start from the confrontation and leave the dealing with the creation aspect of it for later or for flashback? Like, where do I start with it? So I had so many problems just trying to figure out that. Ultimately, I was like, you know what? This is Goatman and Puberty Wolf, and it's their origin story, so let's start with Goatman and Puberty Wolf origin story, and we can deal with the major villain later. So, you know, just, it was, I don't know.
Dude, I think you knocked it out of the park. I wouldn't be surprised if people who have now heard that are going to demand more Goatman and Puberty Wolf.
Okay.
So, you know, mission accomplished there. Yeah, because you're going to get permission.
Okay. All right.
What's gonna happen?
I do have to mention, though,
okay,
that my Puberty Wolf name origin was definitely, I realized after I'd done it, I'm like, you know what, this is freaking Abe Sapien. it's essentially a bastardization of the Abe Sapien naming from the Hellboy comics.
Right.
Um, That's okay. So I was like, you know what? But you know what? It works. It got it taken care of, and I had to figure out a way to make it fit, and that did it. It's strange, and there's nothing that's going to make that name any less strange. So I got to figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah.
And I think it worked pretty well.
So, yeah, I think it was good.
You know, introduced a character that I plan on having be a recurring character as well, with Tommy being kind of a kind of recurring character who is he's kind of like one of Goatman's spies out there searching out where things are and passing him information and whatnot like that. So
yeah, at first I thought he was gonna end up being Puberty Wolf, so
yeah, that was the fake out that I kind of wanted to do.
Well, good, you faked me out. I was like, oh, he's meeting Puberty Wolf, but yeah. No.
Yeah, and that was one of the things too, is I put this whole thing in terms of, and I mean, I may like go into writing with it later, but you know, he talks about the Wild Hunt and with the Wild God,
yeah,
you know, ancient god and stuff like that. And my thought was, do you know, I mean, Goatman, as opposed to going to the, you know, the Judeo-Christian side of the mythology, why not just go straight to Greek and Roman? And this is like a satyr.
Yeah.
So why not have the person who gave him the powers, why not have it be Pan? You know, he's supposed to be this, you know, very unpredictable kind of figure. So why not do that? And it kind of fit really well with what I wanted to do, and honestly sets up something later on as well with the idea of, you know, just slipping it in there that he paid a price for the powers that he was given. And so where that comes in and what was the price and, you know, what ultimately will be the effect was, I built in a lot of this other story stuff, and now I kind of feel like I have to deal with it.
It has to be dealt with. I've
created
way.
Something, and now it yeah. needs to be talked about. I've created a monster.
Yeah, you have, quite literally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and figuratively as well, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, so there we are. That's my that's the long hard winter.
That's great. I loved it. I don't know what else to say except I loved it. It was way better than anything with Goatman and Puberty Wolf attached to it should be.
Has any right to be.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay.
No right to be as good as it is, but it's friggin' good.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to get it there.
For sure. All right.
Let's move on to your story, man.
Yeah, let's get that thing done.
Yeah. This thing that you keep, like, you know, talking about as if it's, like, taxes.
I don't know about that. I had fun writing it. I'm not gonna say that I didn't. To kind of go to what you said, I did run out of time writing it. I was mostly interested in writing the third act of mine, and the third act is unfortunately what got probably the most rushed of the three.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I enjoyed. It's something that I would like to visit. But again, like you, I wanted to write the story of Batman punching people, and this wasn't it. I got so into the idea of writing the origin of the character for the, you know, corny Golden Age flashback, that the way the story is set up, that's kind of what I had to tell in the last bit as well. And it's not necessarily the part I was most excited about writing.
Yeah.
So I like what I wrote, but you know, I'm going to have to just kind of let it speak for itself. It's
okay.
It is another take on Goatman and Puberty Wolf.
All right.
All right.
Sorry.
We're going to dive into my story, which I'm going to call Goatman and Puberty Wolf, The New Golden Age. And it begins much like this. Shadows begin to blanket New City as the sun sets in the western sky. But no shadow is darker than the one currently hanging over the home of Warren Weston. A home nestled deep in a part of town known as the Brambles, Warren finds himself in dark commune with none other than the devil himself. Though Warren is a good man, the untimely demise of his adopted son Jimmy has pushed him to the most desperate measures a father can be pushed. "Hear me, fiend!" Warren calls out to the flames gathered in the corner of his living room. As he speaks, they take shape, and a being with goat legs, red skin, horns, and a tail stands across from him. The devil bows, all the while smiling evilly.
"What is it, mortal?"
"I hate the thought of speaking to you," Warren says. "But I hate the thought of being without my son while his killers go unpunished even more." The devil rubs his hands together eagerly.
"So, do you seek your son's soul or retribution?"
A tear forms in Warren's tired eyes.
"I just want my boy. The retribution will come." "And what do I get in exchange?"
Warren swallows hard and takes a long breath.
"You get me."
The devil sneers at the man. He knows he's already won this game.
"Absolutely not."
Warren Weston's mouth falls open, and he stares at the demon in shock.
"Why?"
The demon begins to pace while stroking his goatee and snickering to himself. As he paces, his laughter becomes more and more maniacal. Finally, he turns and flicks his wrist, sending bolts of liquid fire cascading across the room. But instead of burning the floor, they call forth the body of young Jimmy Weston. The body levitates lifelessly just above the floor. A child of only 16, he seems so much smaller to Warren now, like this.
"Jimmy!"
Warren calls, lunging for his child, but just as he nears him, a wall of fire separates them again.
"Not so fast, mortal," the devil sneers. "I said no. Your boy was no saint. His soul is mine. You may be a good, charitable man, but your calling me here alone proves you are not without faults."
Warren falls to the ground, helpless.
"I do not barter in souls that may yet be mine for free."
Warren falls to the ground defeated.
"What would you have me do? I cannot forsake my boy."
The devil sneers at the man, rubbing his hands together.
"All right, mortal. I propose a deal. I shall mark you as a workman in my employ, and you shall gather 5 items for me."
"That's all?"
"Oh, it'll be quite dangerous."
The devil smiles.
"I'll do what I can to aid you, but your safety is not assured."
"Then my boy is returned to me first. That way, if I perish, he can still live." The devil produces a curved blade and cuts his hand. The black liquid pours from the wound, but does not fall to the floor. Instead, it coalesces and swirls in mid-air, turning into a parchment.
"Then let us review the terms. Your boy returned to you, and in exchange you wear my mark and hunt the relics for me."
Warren's mind races. Everything in his being tells him to refuse, but his heart and the sight of his adopted son's body reinforces his resolve.
"Deal."
The room fills with brilliant fire that doesn't burn, but consumes everything. Through the crackling hiss of flame, the devil's final words echo as if they are part of the fire itself.
"Now forever be shown as a servant of the beast, and know when you call for power, it is I who offers it."
The fire rushes into Warren's body, covering it completely in an orange glow. His soul fights against the dark magic, but he has already given up willingly. He reaches a hand out for his boy.
"Jimmy!" His hand wraps around Jimmy's wrist, and the orange energy begins to wrap around the boy as well, before exploding into a brilliant white light. The darkness falls on the room, and all becomes quiet. "Jimmy! Jimmy, my boy, are you there?" Warren calls, but his voice wavers unnaturally. "Dad, is that you?" Jimmy calls from across the room. Light slowly begins to return to the room, and the two figures remaining in it begin to appear. Jimmy pulls himself up, looking down at his hands in surprise and horror, his right wrist now carrying a scar as if it's been horrifically burned. "But I was..." "Dead," comes Warren's voice from the last remaining shadow. "You were my son, but I have saved you. I have brought you back." Warren steps from the shadows, his cloven hoof clacking on the wooden floor. His body has grown, and his clothes now hang from him in tatters. His appearance is almost that of the devil, but as if it were merged with a goat. He is not marked as a beast. He has become the beast. "No, father," Jimmy says as fur begins to sprout from his arms and words come from behind fangs. "You have damned us." Patricia Sampson pressed stop on the tape recorder and clasped her hands together. Her face was practically glowing behind a broad, ultra-bright smile. "Well," she said, "what do you think of that?" She looked out across the boardroom. Seated around a long wooden table were four gentlemen and one woman, all in business suits, and all staring at Patricia's smile with blank expressions. "What exactly was that?" Hector, the man seated closest to her, asked. Without missing a beat, she lifted the small bagged comic book in her hands and turned it for the other members of the board to see. "That was an audio dramatization of Goatman and Puberty Wolf, issue number 1. She turned as she spoke so that everyone got a chance to see the aged comic in her hands. "Puberty Wolf?" Jason called out. "What the hell kind of name is that?" Patricia took a deep breath. She had prepared for this. The odd name for the sidekick had always been a sticking issue for the now-canceled series. There had been a brief period in the 90s where they had tried to bring it back with the name changed to Teen Wolf, but some lawyers had a field day with that, and the reboot didn't get very far. "I know it's a bad name, but I think our audience will be receptive to it," Patricia said.
"Audience?" Hector said. "You're not seriously pitching this, are you?"
Patricia raised her hands and the room fell silent. "I know it seems like a silly idea, but with the extreme popularity of superhero movies and TV shows currently, we'd be crazy not to pursue any and all avenues. The kids are just eating this stuff up." Stacy in the back raised her hand. She always did that, which made her seem far more polite than she actually was. Patricia gave her a little nod, and she lowered her hand before speaking. "I hear you, Patty, I do, but do you really think kids are going to go for a man that looks like a goat and his werewolf sidekick, especially with such a stupid, stupid name?" Patricia pushed her glasses up higher on her head, set the comic on the desk, and clasped her hands in front of her at the waist. "I do, and I have so much faith that I had one of our writers work up a little update for Goatman and Puberty Wolf so you can see the direction we're going." The board members all started looking at each other and whispering. "Now, keep in mind, this was not done as a screenplay. I instead had him focus more on capturing the theme and mood we'll be going for once we move forward. I ask that you all keep an open mind, and I'm certain you will like the direction we're taking this series." Patricia then opened her briefcase and began passing out small packets to each of the board members. They were grudgingly opened, and then all together, they began to read. The Brambles is what they called this particular district of New City. It was called that because it went up during the war when metal and other building materials were scarce. As a result, almost all the buildings in the Brambles are made of wood.
On a windy day, the entire district creaks and groans as if the homes and buildings move subtly on the breeze. Tonight, the Brambles is practically singing. Shadows bathed in red light flash over and over again in front of Warren Weston's home. Neighbors gather and whisper to one another as the paramedics wheel out a gurney, the figure laying on top of it small and covered from head to toe in a nearly all-white sheet. Inside the house, Warren has found a dark corner to hide in. He cradles his knees in his arms and just shakes. He is beyond tears at this point, beyond sobbing. "Mr. Weston?" A voice comes from the other side of the dark room. It's feminine and soft. Somehow, in the darkness and pain, it seems like a warm light. Warren tries to reply, but there's nothing left. "Can I turn on a light, Mr. Weston?" The lights come on without another word being said. On the periphery, the room looks like a typical living room, a couch, a fake plant or two, bookshelf, and a coffee table. It's the middle of the room that betrays the seemingly normalcy of the rest. The pool of blood, the gun, the scattering of papers flecked with crimson droplets. Warren stares at them, no longer able to see anything normal about the room at all. Unable to even pay real attention to the woman standing in the entryway. "I know this is a hard time, Mr. Weston, but I need to speak with you if I may." Warren finally notices her and wonders how he missed her. The woman is tall and lean. She's dressed in an overly tight business suit, and her black hair seems to swallow anything even hinting at light or color. He takes her appearance in, and for one very brief second, the horrors of the past few hours are all gone, replaced by a primal attraction that removes all the pain, but it's still only for a second. "I'm sorry," he starts, and the tears almost return with it. I'm sorry, what did you need?" The woman steps into the room, stomping across the scattered papers. Her tall heels pierce them as she walks towards Warren. "My name is Angela. I need to talk to you about your son's suicide. Would you like to go somewhere else, or can we talk here?"
"Here is fine."
"All right. Well, Mr. Weston, do you know why your son would have wanted to kill himself?" Warren put his head back on his knees.
"I already spoke to the police."
"I'm not the police, Mr. Weston," she said, and rested a hand on his shoulder. It was warm. He looked up at her, and she smiled at him.
"He was picked on at school, bullied."
"That's it?" she asked.
"It was enough,"
he said sternly, and she pulled her hand back as if he was going to bite her.
"My son had cystic acne. That made him an easy target."
Angela picked up one of the pieces of paper scattered on the ground and turned it over. On the other side was a series of professionally drawn black and white comic panels. The panels showed a progression of an acne-faced boy transforming into a wolf-like creature and saving his friends from a mugger. "Did you draw this?" she asked. Looking at the comic page was enough to set Warren off again. Tears began to run freely down his cheeks before being scattered by the stubble on his face.
"I didn't know what else to do. I thought I could show him it doesn't matter what you look like. You can be good and do good."
Angela continued to examine the page. "Puberty Wolf?"
"His name," Warren said. "I hated it. He probably did too. It was a joke at the time, but we both ran with it."
"How many of these are there?" Warren wiped his eyes and started to stand. Angela offered him a hand, but he declined and stood with a grunt.
"I don't know. I've been drawing them for him for a year or two now."
"You're very good."
"What do you want?"
Warren said, finally letting his temper boil over. Angela looked shocked, and when she didn't speak, he pushed past her and headed for the kitchen. It was a good minute or two after he had poured his first glass of wine that he heard the click-clack of her heels coming down the hall.
"I'd offer you a drink, but I think I'll need the whole bottle."
And before he had even finished speaking, he saw her and dropped the bottle.
It shattered on the tile floor, sending large chunks of glass everywhere, and another puddle of crimson liquid on the floor. Angela's eyes were glowing, literally glowing crimson, as she walked into the kitchen. Warren didn't know exactly what had changed beyond the eyes, but she had somehow gone from unspeakably beautiful to somewhat emaciated and unsettling. "I want to give you a chance to get your son back, Mr. Weston." "What the hell?" he cried out. "Well, you're pretty close on that one." She laughed and crossed the kitchen, crunching glass beneath her as she moved. Warren backed up until he hit the kitchen counter, but she kept walking until her body was pressed against his, and all he could do was stare into the horrible glowing eyes. "You know exactly who I am, Mr. Weston. The only question you should be asking is, what do I want?" It was an impossible thing to believe, but the evidence was staring him in the face. Warren couldn't explain it, but he knew her claim was true. This was an incarnation of the devil. She stepped away from him, and he found himself gasping for breath, suddenly all too aware that he had been holding it. "What do you want?" She leaned up against his kitchen counter and smiled at him. "I want to give you your son back."
"No, you don't."
"Well," she laughed, "I guess you got me there. I mostly want something in return, but you having him certainly doesn't bother me. He's not doing me very much good." Warren nearly fell over, but he did his best to hide his shock.
"You have him."
The demon nodded at him. "What did you think? He put a bullet in his own head. His brain is in pieces in your carpet. Do you really think he went to heaven?" She leaned back on the counter, and her dress raised noticeably. It was an intentional move, meant to be alluring, meant to fog his mind. Warren wondered if it made any difference, though, as it was certainly working.
"So what do you want, my soul?"
She laughed. It was condescending and mocking and genuine. "Hardly. The fact that you were speaking to me at all shows how close your soul is to mine, without having to make any deal at all." She grabbed a glass off the counter beside her and filled it with tap water. "It's not good business to barter with things that might already belong to you."
"Then what?"
Warren asked, his temper starting to flare. She took a long drink from the glass, draining nearly all of the liquid in a single gulp. "There are 5 individuals currently in possession of 5 objects. All of these objects belong to me, and I'd like them returned.
So get them."
"If only it were that easy. Odds are high that these 5 individuals will only part with the objects if they're also parting with their lives." Warren laughed, but it was hollow and fake.
"The devil's suddenly not okay with killing?"
"Free will is still in place here. I can't impose my will on anyone any more than the other team can."
"But you can hire a mercenary."
She refilled the glass. "More or less."
"If it gets me my son, you have a deal," Warren said, putting out his hand.
She actually spit the water over the floor and made a choking sound.
"You have got to be kidding me," she yelled.
"What?
Have you never seen a movie in your life? You have to know it's not that easy. There is a game to this process. Don't just hand me the victory."
Her voice was a genuine frustration, and she began to pace.
"What?"
Warren asked again.
"Let's say I agreed and shook on it." She was becoming very animated as she spoke, the femme fatale demeanor shattered. "So, boom. Get me what I want. I bring your kid back. Only the little suicidal shit is, well, still suicidal. Are you following me here? I get my trinkets, I get you, and I get him right back."
Warren looked horrified. "Why are you telling me this?"
"Because it's no fun. Do you have any idea how rare it is that I actually make a deal with you people? If I do, I want to be far more clever than that."
"So make it so my boy doesn't want to kill himself."
"Free will, doofus," she mocked, punching her own head. "Can't change the choices he'll make." Now Warren started to pace, his own frustration boiling out. Then why the hell are you here? What can you actually do? This time she didn't fake the punch, probably because she was doing it to Warren's head instead of hers. I can't tell you what to ask for. Figure it out. I can bring him back. I can alter his appearance, but no tampering with mind or soul. Those are the rules. So change the way he looks. Fix the things they picked on him for. Make him his, I don't know, his own ideal version of himself. She froze and turned slowly. It was theatrical, meant to look menacing. And it was more than that. It was terrifying. Are you sure? Warren's mind raced. He tried to think of what her game would be, how this would turn around on him. But he had said Jimmy's own ideal image of himself. That would work. So she had to have another angle, another way to get him. You said these people holding these objects would rather die than part with them, right? Her grin spread almost ear to ear. Yes. Then how am I supposed to get him? I'm not exactly a superhero. What if they just shoot me? Then I guess I'd get you, keep your boy, and have to find another rube to get my items. Again, she was being overly open, which meant she didn't want this outcome, probably because it left her without the one thing she really wanted, he thought. Then I have two more conditions. Oh, that's bold of you, she said. What are they? First, I want my boy back before I get the objects. If I go back on my word to obtain them, you can take us both, but as long as I'm pursuing them, we both live. Her face remained emotionless and still. And? I want, Warren paused, looking for the right word, protection, skills, abilities, things that will allow me to manage this. So you do want to be a superhero. He shook his head. I don't know, maybe, just the knowledge or the power to not get myself killed. Hoo-hoo, she yelled and jumped up on the countertop. This is getting interesting. But what you are asking for is for some of my power. Powers from hell, to be more specific. There is no redemption from that. I think I'm a little past that at this point anyway, Warren said. It also means you will be marked as an agent of mine. It's not a... She hesitated, searching for the right phrase. Easy mark to wear. She was trying to lead him in another direction, he thought. This was it. It felt like things were fairly set, and he wasn't about to let her divert them. My boy in his ideal state, alive, capable of being normal, and returned here and now. In return, I wear your mark, take your power, and I will get your items for you. When you are done, he gets to live his life free of you and free of this. I don't care what you need from me at that point. Warren Weston once again extended his hand, and this time there was no laughter. She simply stared at him. He could feel those eyes pierce through him, see deeper, see not his words but his soul, and she just stared. There was no word of agreement. She extended her own hand, and it split open at the palm. Blood oozed from the wound, but it did not fall. Instead, it moved horizontally towards him. Warren felt his body seize up, and his own palm split open, his own blood mimicking the movements of hers. The two streams of blood met between them, coalesced, and burned vibrant orange. Warren felt his body light on fire, and suddenly flame seared every inch of his skin. He watched in horror as the skin charred and fell away. He could see the muscle and bone beneath as his blood boiled where it fell, and then darkness overtook him. What the hell? What the hell are you? Warren heard the voice as if it were miles away, but it kept growing louder. Oh God, it's alive! Dad! Dad! Jimmy Weston screamed as he stared down at the creature curled up in the family kitchen. Jimmy, Warren called. Everything fell silent for a moment. Warren's vision began to return. He saw Jimmy standing over him. Jimmy looked exactly as he had, a handsome face scarred by acne, a good boy who had to try twice as hard to show it.
That wasn't the deal.
Warren spoke again. What are you? Jimmy called, looking down at him. Dad, where are you? The goat-like creature curled on the floor began to move, and Jimmy leapt away from it. Stay back, whatever you are.
Jimmy, it's me.
Warren's voice came from the creature, somewhat distorted, as if an animal were mimicking human speech. What? I said stay back! Jimmy screamed again, and his own voice took a more guttural tone.
Jimmy!
Now Warren was becoming concerned. His son had retreated to the far side of the kitchen, but his hair was too long. He was too tall, too muscular. He looked off somehow.
Dad, help me!
The last words of Jimmy's call turned into a snarl, and the boy's face elongated. His bones snapped into different shapes, and hair sprouted from every part of his body. He stared at the other creature in the kitchen, snarling and frothing at the mouth.
Stay away from me!
The voice was deep and completely alien from what it had been before. Warren stood and noticed his own body, surrounded by tatters of shredded and burned clothes. He too was standing taller, and on hooved feet. He turned to the window and caught the first glance at himself since the deal was made. He looked like a satyr, like a goat creature. He was a monster.
Jimmy, he said, turning back to his son, I'm sorry.
It was all he could say to his son. His boy had indeed taken on the appearance of his ideal self, the very werewolf superhero he had drawn him as for years. This, all of this, was his fault. The deal had seemed right, but he had damned them both. Warren Weston opened his arms in a peaceful gesture and walked towards his snarling son. His son who was no longer dead. His son who he had given his soul for. And as he walked, he could only hear the devil laughing. That's it.
Interesting. Huh. I like the concept of doing the dual element to it and then framing it within the whole, like, the reboot concept.
Yeah, I kind of, it was one of those things where I kind of wanted to do both, both stories. And so it felt like kind of a funny way to include both.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and it's really kind of a, you know, it's almost like a critique kind of a concept. You know, one of the issues that I've had with some of the updates, like superheroes, is that reason.
Oh,
there are some.
Hold on, Aaron. I'm losing you. You're cutting in and out real bad.
Okay, here. Is that any better?
Yep.
Okay, I don't know what that was. But for some reason, the filmmakers have this concept where it's like, in order to be good, it has to be dark and gritty. And that worked with Batman because Batman's a dark, gritty character, right?
Right.
And it works with Wolverine because Wolverine's an anti-hero. But it's like there are some superheroes that, you know, they need to be fun. and I think that's interesting, like that they, you know, it's they're updating, you know, what obviously is, you know, this classic, you know, superhero, and the direction that they've decided to take it is, you know, this really dark, gritty concept and everything, which, I mean, already the original version is kind of, you know, even for a golden age is pretty dark, but
yeah, it still would be like the darkest Golden Age comic ever.
Yeah. Yeah. But so like that idea that, you know, and, you know, should I say I'm looking at you, Zack Snyder, in the idea that it's just like, you know, the heroes are supposed to be, at least some heroes are supposed to be, you know, idealized, you know, versions of heroism, and that having been said, you know, they don't need to be crazy.
Right.
But like, I like that it was, I like the meta aspect of it, I guess, where it's like you have the two different versions, but they're within a third version of it. And I, you know, I liked having the two of them in contrast together. I think it worked really, really well. So you said that there were, you know, you had these two versions. What made you decide to do both of them and frame them in this way, as opposed to, you know, picking one and running with it?
So I came up with the idea, hearing your story and the kind of religious tones to it. And I kind of started running with the concept of, you know, what if Goatman is a guy who made a deal with the devil to get his son back, and that's where they both got their kind of powers from. And so that was kind of the basis. And then I thought, okay, well, do I take it Golden Age silly, or do I try and kind of ground it in what it would probably be today? Mm-hmm. And then I thought, as I was trying to decide between the two of them, I thought, well, wouldn't it be funny if I just did both? And the idea was that it was a pitch for how do we update, you know, kind of the vision was, how do we take, you know, the old Adam West Batman TV show and then make The Dark Knight, you know, from that. And so I kind of came up with this idea of like, well, society with superheroes right now is kind of all about the reboot. So what if the story is not so much about the characters, but so much about how characters like that are rebooted?
Yeah.
And so I kind of ran with that, because the thing I wanted to explore was, I mean, my goals with it ultimately were, I wanted to come up with an interesting way for the characters to come into being, to kind of set up a universe where it's like, okay, I would be interested in what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here's a plausible reason why we have a character named Puberty Wolf and a character named Goatman and where they come from. But to kind of set all that stuff up, but also not necessarily have it be the primary focus for this particular piece.
Okay.
So it is weird. It's very weird to have... I fell in love with the idea of this jarring, like, stop right in the middle and then cut to a boardroom where they're talking about the comic book.
Yeah. Well, I think it acts as, like, a foil to it as well, you know? It makes the goofy part seem even more goofy, and it makes the darker version seem a bit darker by having that in-between. I have to say one of my favorite things was I really think your devil character in the second part is awesome.
I'm so glad. That makes me so happy.
Like, she's scary, and I think that's super cool.
I'm so glad you like her, because honestly, when I got going and I was thinking up the ideas for it, I basically had... When I was coming up with everything, I had the boardroom, because it was, you know, a basic scene. It was like, hey, here's this thing. Now let's do another thing. And so I wasn't worried about that. Mm-hmm. But I had, like, the dumb description of the city and the time and meeting the devil and all that. I had that dialogue in my head. And then I had the devil for the second part's dialogue in my head. And I fell in love with the things that the devil was saying in the second part so much that's why I kept it. Because otherwise one of the two were going to get cut. And I was probably going to cut the second. But I was like, no, I like this character so much in the follow-up. Mm-hmm. Because I just loved the idea of the devil just being like, hey, let's make a deal. And someone just being like, okay, and it actually making the and devil
makes,
angry.
Makes the
like,
devil pissed off. Come on, no. It's the only fun I get to have.
Right. Like, don't you see how this can go? Because there's something so scary about someone who, you know, more or less tells you, I'm going to screw you over. And it is my goal to screw you over. And I already could have, because look at all these things you've already let me do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so confident that I'm going to screw you over that I feel fine telling you about that and still sending you on your way, because I'm still going to win.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it just seems to me that that would be that it just. It's a really, for me, really spot on concept of what, you know, the devil, I guess, seems to me would be like. And the idea is someone who has been potentially, you know, I mean, historically, religiously, you know, in literature, that's kind of what the devil does. And that at this point, like, the devil's got to be pretty damn good at it to the point where, you know, just saying, I have a deal for you. And then, like, coming to expect the game to work a certain way, you know, it's like saying, okay, we're going to play Monopoly, except for you have to go the other direction.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, well, wait, there's just one little thing off about it. And it's really not a huge, you know, difference in it. But at the same time, it just, it flip-flops your thinking on it. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I writing that character was absolutely my favorite thing in doing this whole write. I really kind of fell in love with the way she acted in it. And I was like, is it tropey to make the devil a girl, to just kind of go with that? Because it kind of has become that to some degree. Well, but yeah. I wanted...
You don't really have many options.
It's true. You get to pick basically three choices. Man, a woman, or a monster. And so...
Or a man-woman, but, you know...
Right.
If you wanted...
So I thought it would be, and so ultimately, because I couldn't decide, because it kind of didn't matter, because the character was pretty much the same regardless. And then I thought, okay, let's put it in the context of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a group of people like this board trying to come up with what the edgy new reboot of this story is going to be. Of course they're going to go with a female devil. Like,
yeah,
that's just what they're going to do, because that will seem, if I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know, that seems a little too obvious and a little too overdone. Then of course that's what they would go with. So that was kind of my
slammed on table.
But yeah, so that was kind of the decision there, and it was just so much fun to write her. And it was one of those things where, while I had planned a lot of the dialogue that she was going to talk about, you know, the, hey, if you bring back a suicidal kid, I don't have control of free will. Guess what happens? They kill themselves again. That's just the way it works. I had that stuff planned out, but the silly things like her calling him a doofus and jumping around on tables and actually doing a spit take, like all of that was just organic from how I pictured her and how I pictured her behaving and getting to have fun with it. And so I just kind of loved writing that part.
You know, I mean, this was a fun prompt, as ridiculous as it was, and let's face it, as pissed off as you were at me for bringing this back into our collective consciousness, you had fun writing this.
Oh, and absolutely.
Not only can I tell from you explicitly saying that you had fun writing it, but I could tell that you had fun writing it just from the story itself. You know, it came across as being something that you really put time and thought into. Your characterization on the devil was fantastic. I really think that having the two different stories in there was, or technically the three different stories in there, was a good decision. So kudos to you as well, man. I really, really enjoyed the story this week.
Awesome. Thank you. I was excited about it. It's fun. All right, well, that is going to be it for now.
Yes.
For Goatman and Puberty Wolf. We will definitely be taking a little break from them, but doesn't mean they won't pop up here and there. And hey, we've just given you two different universes for these characters, and nothing is stopping you from toying around and sending us your own thoughts, either your own take or, I don't know, play around with ours. Send us what the next adventure would be.
Goatman and Puberty Wolf fan fiction.
Heck yeah.
Or fan art. Send us your pictures of what you think they look like. Just because I'm curious.
Oh, speaking of being curious, what'd you think for the explanation for Puberty Wolf? That was the best I could come up with.
I liked it. It was good. It was good. You know, it made sense. And it worked.
The boardroom was a nice place where I could be like, look, can we all agree that the most obvious name for him is Teen Wolf? Like, yeah. That's where you would have to go,
or
but
Wolf
you can't
Boy
call
or
him
something
that.
Like
yeah.
that. But you can't call him that.
So,
It's a legal minefield.
So I thought that was a nice way to kind of acknowledge, like, yeah, this like, name's listen, terrible.
This we understand that the name is terrible, but we have no choices.
It's so terrible that not only do they call it terrible in the boardroom, but then in the reboot story, they also acknowledge that it is mm-hmm. terrible. So. Yeah. But hey, that also falls in line with the idea of reboots, where you take the silly ideas and you point them out. I mean, even good superhero movies do that. Like Iron Man, when he's making fun of the idea of what I'm going to say, he's my bodyguard. That doesn't make any sense.
Uh-huh. Or in the original Bryan Singer X-Men. When Wolverine was talking about their suits and he's like, you know, what did you, or Cyclops is like, what did you think? We were going to be running around in blue and yellow spandex?
Yep.
You know, that kind of a thing. It's, you know, you make references to those kinds of things. So.
Absolutely.
They're callbacks.
Callbacks!
And that is something that we know well here at Parallel Words.
Yeah, this was an episode of callbacks, essentially, when you really think about it.
Yeah.
Who knew? Way back when I was trying to think of something scary and I thought, well, a goat man's scary, that this is what it would lead to.
You know, and I think that we could compare that to writing as a whole, right? Trying to, you know, fabricate some kind of moral out of this story is that sometimes you may come up with the most random, ridiculous concept in the stuff that you are doing, and that may end up being your favorite thing in the world. About what you're doing and just reinforcing the fact that you need to write everything down or record it or make notes of stuff, whether it be you're waking up in the middle of the night or you are, you know, at your retail job, writing things down, scribbling frantically on a piece of receipt paper, whatever yeah. you have to do, just always be using stuff, always be looking around you. Always be listening to the stuff because that's stuff that you can integrate every time, you know, and then you've got that back catalog, put it all in one place, have a notebook or a box or a journal or whatever, but keep it with you, keep it secret, keep it safe and use it.
Yeah. If we can make a cool story out of Goatman and Puberty Wolf, no idea is beyond
yeah
being cultivated into something amazing. So just mm-hmm. remember that. I mean, I'm not saying that what we just presented to you is the be-all end-all of storytelling brilliance, but my point is that it is a concept that is perhaps the silliest thing we've ever discussed. And
we've discussed some really silly things.
I know on my part, I loved Aaron's story and I would love to hear more. And so you take a concept silly like that and you've got that coming out of it. You know, imagine what you would do with a concept that's, you know, pretty rock solid. So yeah. It's all about what you do with the ideas. Now, before we go, because, you know, thanks to my million word epic, we're running long. But yeah. I do want to point out a couple of things before we get to the closing. The first thing is I encourage anybody who listens to this show to write in, participate in the show however you want. Oh, shoot. We have yes. an email to address.
Oh, we have an email.
Tell you what, I'm going to save it for the next episode because it's not going to – it won't be long before we record again. Okay. Because the next episode is going to be a topic episode, so we Woo-hoo. Don't have any prep or anything. In fact, I'm pretty sure I already know what the topic's going to be. Oh, so cool. We can record that pretty much anytime. And sorry to, I can't even think of his name, the person who sent me the email. I can't pull it up easily at the moment with where I am. So I apologize. We will get to your email next week. We love emails. We encourage sending them. This episode is just already going too long. So we will get to that, but don't hesitate to send us emails, tweet us, anything like that. We love getting it. Now, the next bit of business.
I'm going to go ahead and take us out.
Okay. I think that's good. That
sounds good to me. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so, or whatever. Thank you
or two
gentlemen or whatever, or
I don't know,
whatever.
I don't know. Anything in between or outside, go
for it. Who cares?
Thank you. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. We hope that you liked our foray into the dark and strange world of Goatman and Puberty Wolf. If you guys like hearing what we're doing, we like doing it, and it's going to keep going no matter what. But if you really do like it, let us know. Shoot us an email at parallelwordscast@gmail.com. Tweet us at parallelwordspc. Head over to our website, which is parallelwordspc.wordpress.com. Send us your fan images, your own versions of stories. Participate with us. Be part of this community that we're trying to create of writers who are just trying to write and hopefully write something that's worth reading. Again, if you like what we're doing, tell your friends, give us a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Let us know that you're listening, and we will see you next time. So for Parallel Words, my name's Aaron Green.
And I'm John Jagger.
Saying goodbye and hello, as always.
Boosh.